And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed
What's
by the
up,
participants
girl,
are not necessarily
you are
those
to
of WHFR Radio
H-F-R,
or Henry Ford
W-H-F-R,
College.
WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Dr. Bill Wickersham. Dr. Wickersham is an educational psychologist and peace educator. He has co-authored the book Confronting Nuclear War, the Role of Education, Religion, and the Community with Jared Gason. In 2001, he was awarded the Gandhi King Ikeda Peace Award from the Martin Luther King Jr. International Chapel at Morehouse College in Atlanta. Currently, he serves as an associate of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation in Santa Barbara, California, as a member of the Global Action to Prevent War, and as a member of Veterans for Peace. He has also authored UFO Commentary, Reality, Cover-Up, and Disclosure, which is a compilation of the findings of UFO researchers over the past few decades. And he's on the line with us to discuss the prospect of peaceful human-ET relations. And so, welcome to the show, Dr. Wickersham.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good to be with you.
Well, I appreciate you coming aboard. I know you haven't been feeling well lately, and you're finally healed enough to to come on the show.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm doing fine today.
Good.
I might add, I'm here in Columbia, Missouri.
Columbia, Missouri. Okay, did I say something wrong here?
No, you didn't. You pointed out that I was an associate with the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation in Santa Barbara, but my home base is Columbia, Missouri, where I'm an adjunct professor of peace studies.
Okay, very good, very good. So, what diverted your attention from peace studies to ufology?
Well, it's sort of the other way around. They sort of came at the same time. I'm sure you know the name Leo Sprinkle.
Oh, yes.
Well, Leo and I were graduate students at the University of Missouri in 1962, and we had similar positions in two different institutions.
Mm-hmm.
I was program director of a student union. Leo was a director of student activities at a women's college called Stevens College, which, of course, is still here in Columbia. And we were tennis buddies. We played on a tennis team together.
Mm-hmm.
And Leo, as you know, was probably the first psychologist that I know of who took people who purportedly had been abducted. He took them into account very seriously, did dialogues with them, did therapy with some. And so I wasn't really aware of everything Leo was doing, but I knew he had had his own UFO sightings in Boulder, Colorado. So that's where we first met.
Okay.
I got into peace studies, and that was in about 1962. And I got into peace studies, actually, in it was probably also about 62 when the U.S. Air Force placed 150 one-megaton bombs in 13 counties of mid-Missouri, put them on Minuteman missiles, and made us the prime target, literally, of Soviet missiles on Earth.
Wow.
So really started getting into that at that point. I'd had a background in vocal music and also physical education.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, you say that was would be the target of the Russians. Where was this?
Actually, Whiteman Air Force Base is about 70 miles from Columbia in mid-Missouri, and they put the missiles in cornfields and other open areas off-road, but close enough that operational crews could get to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had launch control centers with young Air Force lieutenants and captains who were on hair trigger alert all those years. They did take those missiles out of Missouri with the START treaty, but kept similar missiles in North Dakota and Wyoming and Montana, et cetera.
Okay, now, I can appreciate your position and what you're saying as to these being a target. Certainly would be. On the other hand, their missiles would have to traverse a great number of miles of American land before reaching that, Missouri.
Well, that's not a problem. In those days, actually, we had our missiles aimed at places, I say we, the United States did, at various targets in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the Soviet Union, for places like Columbia, Missouri, or really Whiteman Air Force Base, it's at Knob Noster Air Force Base here in Missouri, they had three aimed at every one of ours because their weapons were big, very big weapons, but not as accurate as ours. And but the time for our missiles to leave Columbia, Missouri and hit Moscow, and for theirs to leave south of Moscow or the Ukraine, wherever, it was about 30 minutes, and it still is just a little bit under that.
30 minutes.
So we're talking instant extinction here. And,
oh, yeah?
And as a matter of fact, right now President Trump has 8 minutes to make the decision, and we believe that Vladimir Putin has about 3 minutes. So that's literally hair trigger, instant extinction. Very bad situation.
Scary, isn't it?
Yes. Very scary.
Yeah. You see the movie War Games?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, wait a minute, War Games. You're talking about the young kid who...
Right.
You know, not the day... Are you familiar with The Day After?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Interestingly enough, my wife and I were guests of Ted Koppel for that show. We were in Washington for about 15 years, and there was a panel of Robert McNamara, Brent Scowcroft, Elie Wiesel, and Carl Sagan, and Henry Kissinger, and they did a panel following the showing of that film on ABC on Nightline nationally. And we were able to be there. Hopefully we would get a question, and we didn't. But we did get to talk to Carl Sagan quite a while on the break, which was a good deal. But that film was actually made regarding this, although it transpired a lot in Kansas City and Lawrence, Kansas. It was about the missile silos here in 13 counties of central Missouri.
All right, all right. Yeah, I remember that movie, but I think that was kind of disturbing, actually, that movie. I think War Games pretty much hit the nail on the head that the only way to win that game is not to play.
To not play it, that's exactly. And unfortunately, as we speak right now, there are people making plans in this country and other countries or bigger, better nuclear weapons programs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, President Obama had approved a $1.3 trillion, that's trillion with a T, program for upgrades, which President Trump will simply build on and keep quote, improving. And, Dave, what it's all about, and you know this, and anybody who studied any of this knows that you have to follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking Lockheed aircraft, we're talking Northrop Grumman, we're talking Boeing. I lobbied against those folks when I was in Washington, but they have, figuratively anyway, $1,000 bills in their pocket where we have 50 cents
yeah, right.
to deal with
right.
lunches it's, and that sort of thing for the people who make the decision.
It's the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about, eh?
The military, industrial, academic, labor, White House, congressional complex.
That's too hard for me to remember.
you got the idea.
you probably have it written down right in front of you, right?
No, I got it in my head, that one. I do have a few things written down.
I'm teasing. So, in your book, the UFO commentary, reality cover-up and disclosure. Now, that's not actually a published book, is it? It's just a compilation?
What it is, I wrote, if you simply Google my name and UFOs, you will see a whole host of news articles on UFOs in the Columbia Daily Tribune,
mm-hmm.
and some in the Columbia Missourian, which is a university newspaper. I took maybe 10 or 12 of those and combined them with some other essays that I had written, plus an index which enclosed a letter to NASA and the Library of Congress, which was basically penned by Victor Vigiani in Toronto, but was, and then I edited it, and then Paul Hellyer and Edgar Mitchell signed on. I included that because a very important letter regarding what constitutes evidence.
Right.
With regard to UFOs.
Right. But, yeah, it's pretty much, in a nutshell, what, you know, the UFO evidence over
well,
the decades.
Well, the point is, with this, Dave, people who are ufologists and have been, all I am in this field is an amateur journalist trying to speak to my community, and of course it does go online, about the reality of UFOs, about the long-term cover-up, about the need for disclosure, and especially, in my case, what university faculty and other educators should do to bring this to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is a kind of a primer for people who know a little bit about UFOs who have an interest. But it's not directed really to ufologists, except it may help them reiterate some materials that they already know.
Right, right. But I guess what I'm saying is someone doesn't know a lot about the UFO phenomenon, or they say, well, there's no evidence. I like that one. There's no evidence.
Right.
Yeah. If they read this compilation, you know, it would pretty much say, okay, here's where the evidence is. And this
well, that's
is,
right. This... In other words, what we do, I have people all the time tell me, you really don't have evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're saying is we don't believe in anecdotal evidence at all. In any research course that I've ever been in, graduate or otherwise, and certainly we do this in law enforcement, when highly credentialed people make a statement, you don't necessarily believe it, but you pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You listen, and you weigh and measure it against what other people who may know what they're talking about or who may not have a clue, who may not have any evidence at all on their side. That's very important stuff.
Right.
And we've got massive amounts of that. And, well, I'll give you one example. Somebody says, Dave, how do, you talk to a guy by the name of Wickersham, and he says he has evidence of a cover-up. Okay, my evidence for the cover-up is when I was teaching or was working at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, J. Allen Hynek, as you know, whom you know, came to make a speech, Hynek being Project Blue Book, the U.S. Air Force primary science director. He told us in a small group of faculty and students, we simply falsified the data on 20% of the cases that we studied, of over 1,200 cases, about 20% of that. What we did is not report it, then we gave it to special operations teams so then they could go and check it out for the Air Force and the U.S. government and cover it up.
Right. And then, to top that off, he also complained that they weren't giving him the good cases, just the ones they could, pretty much the ones they could identify.
Yeah, when you get, when you start a cover-up, you never know what you're getting. You know, you just don't know what, but when the top guy, I suppose he's the top guy, maybe he wasn't, but he was certainly a big figure and is a big name for the Air Force and with their spokesperson. When he tells you that, it's a man with a conscience, because he didn't always assume that over the years.
Mm-hmm.
There was one case, as you know, in Michigan at a women's college where he attributed the UFO to swamp gas.
Right.
And that went wild on throughout the country, and people just laughed at it.
Yeah.
Made him look totally silly.
We just...
But after... At some point after that, he kept seeing so many cases that he did think were valid that he said the Air Force wouldn't, you know, wouldn't admit this if one flew right down Main Street.
Right, right. I'm broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan, and
yes.
I'm a member of the Michigan Mutual UFO Network,
right.
MUFON, and we had the Swamp Gas Conference here. Last year, and it was a good turnout, darn good turnout. And all the evidence, once again, after, 20 years? 50 years?
50, well, it's actually almost, if you go to 47, it's 70 years.
70 years, yeah.
If you go to Roswell.
Well, no, but I'm talking about after the swamp
years,
gas.
Yes, I'm not sure how many years.
Yeah.
On the Michigan side.
I think it's 50 years, but... Yeah, all the evidence was once again presented, and I learned things that I didn't know about that case from people who were there and people who studied the evidence. But anyway, yeah, that's the that case and the Socorro, New Mexico case was the ones that turned Hynek around.
Is that correct? There was a sheriff who was
right.
accosted right in Socorro.
Yeah. Well, you say accosted. Well, he saw the landed craft, and he thought it was an ammo dump that was on fire that was over in that area. And he happened to be chasing a speeder at the time and broke off that chase because he thought this was more important. Goes up to parks his car and sees this egg-shaped craft and guys in silver suits around the craft. Yeah, he was, and then it took off. They have evidence. They had physical evidence of that landing.
Oh, sure. Well, there's plenty of physical evidence. As a matter of fact, the other one, when somebody says to me, "Where's your evidence?" You, of course, know the name Ben Rich.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Rich headed the Lockheed Skunk Works. He was the second director of the Skunk Works. And, of course, they did the U-2 observatory plane that went over Moscow or went over the Soviet Union. They did the Blackbird. They did all kinds of cutting-edge aeronautical new devices and machines, et cetera.
Right.
And he has indicated that we have the ability to take E.T. home.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his colleagues, Don Phillips, and if anybody's interested, they really should just Google Don Phillips Alien Technology. Phillips states straightforwardly that the artifacts from Roswell, New Mexico UFO crash were back engineered and were fed into their processes at Lockheed Skunk Works.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Rich finally, toward the end of his life, revealed the UFO connection, he said some of the UFOs are theirs, some are ours, meaning that they had been able to do some back engineering. anybody.
Well, of course, the skeptic can say, well, he was dying. He was probably on medication and hallucinating. And
But Phillips isn't.
But Phillips isn't.
Is still alive. And it's a wonderful, wonderful film, about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I like to point to the Disclosure Project, which Phillips was a member of.
Oh, was he part of Disclosure?
Huh? The Disclosure
Project. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
yes.
Stephen Greer's.
Stephen Greer's
Disclosure Project. And, I just, don't believe me. Look at these guys. Oh, yeah,
well,
didn't say anything.
I didn't fully answer your first question either regarding how essentially I got in and when I got into this. I had known, of course, Leo Sprinkle all those years. But in 1982, when I was working in Washington, American Humanistic Psychology Association had its national meeting. And so Leo came, and he and my wife and I had dinner and celebrated old times. But he said, Bill, there's a guy you really got to meet. And I said, who's that? He said, his name is Scott Jones. And I said, well, who is Scott? And he said, well, Scott is a special assistant to Senator Claiborne Pell of Rhode Island. He's a former naval aviator and intelligence officer, and he has really done a lot of work. In fact, Lawrence Rockefeller gave him close to $1 million to travel worldwide to study the UFO phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Well, you can imagine, I was at Scott's office the next day, mm-hmm. and we've been close friends ever since.
Good.
But the stuff that Scott supplied, and of course he supplied for the Rockefeller Initiative much, not all, because Stephen Greer did, too, and others did. But Scott supplied much of the background knowledge for those briefings that Lawrence Rockefeller did for the Clintons,
right,
at his ranch in Wyoming.
Right. I need to take one moment here to remind our listeners that you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM, on your radio. And we're speaking with the author and UFO researcher, peace advocate, Dr. Bill Wickersham. Dr. Wickersham, I'm speaking of Dr. Greer's Disclosure Project. Carol Rosen was a featured whistleblower at that event. And I've got her quote here, but if you want to talk about her quote, you're familiar, I assume.
I know Carol. We both were with the International Educators for World Peace.
Right.
She was a national chancellor, and I was Missouri chancellor. So we know each other, and she works closely with Scott Jones and did also work closely with Edgar Mitchell and Will Miller.
Mm-hmm. And Wernher von Braun.
Yeah, she did for at least the last two years of his life, right?
And she stated that toward the end of his life, he said that he told her, first the Russians are going to be considered the enemy, and then terrorists would be identified. And then we were going to identify third world countries or nations of concern. And the next enemy was asteroids. And against asteroids, we're going to build space-based weapons. And this is her quote now. And the funniest one, she said, of all was against what he called aliens or extraterrestrials. And that would be the final card. And over and over and over during the 4 years that I knew him, I was giving speeches for him, he would bring up that last card. And he'd say, Carol, that last card is the alien card. We're going to have to build space-based weapons against aliens. And all of it, he said, is a lie.
Well, I couldn't agree more.
And so this is the...
Of course, as you know, the U.S. Space Command and the U.S. Strategic Command has had plans for that, for those space weapons for certainly more than 20 years. In fact, even that meeting I told you about with ABC, Ted Koppel, there were people from an organization called the High Frontier, who, and I'm not so sure they were talking about ETs and UFOs, but all of this planning has been going into what was called Vision for 2020. And they're talking about particle beams, they're talking about lasers that, by the way, are powered by hydrogen bombs, and something like tungsten receptive or projectiles that are called rods from God. That is all in the offing right now. And you can bet that Lockheed and Grumman and Boeing are just salivating because they can't wait to get it, to really get the weapons in space.
They've
been doing the R&D forever, but we hope that under President Trump that won't happen. But my fear is that it will be shown somewhat in that $54 billion he's talking about. But as you know, Dave, and certainly Stephen Greer has spoken to this over and over, the black budget, we have no idea how much money is going into these special projects.
No.
There's no idea. Rumsfeld himself at one point said that the Pentagon could not account for $2 trillion worth of expenditures. What they do is rake it off and give it into projects like the weapons and space program.
But they never did investigate as to where that $2 trillion went, eh?
No. That's only for you. If your income tax is screwed up, they'll go after you, but they won't go after $2
trillion. And we should not ask questions, should we?
Of course not. Of course not.
No, it's only our money. But in 1983, President Reagan proposed the Strategic Defense Initiative. And that's weapons in space or Star Wars. And to my knowledge, they have weapons in space. In fact,
no, we don't have weapons. Space is militarized to the best of our knowledge. We don't think it's weaponized, meaning with actual weapons in orbit. Now, I could be wrong about that, but what is admitted, because there is an outer space treaty which does not allow hydrogen bombs in outer space, but it did allow other weapons. So right now at the UN, there is a treaty for the prevention of an arms race in outer space called PAROS, P-A-R-O-S, which China and Russia and most every other nation on Earth has begged us to sign, and we won't do it because, as I say, follow the money. Lockheed and Boeing are going to make a lot of money on this.
But it's not necessarily atomic or hydrogen bombs.
We don't know. Well, the point is...
But it's missiles.
Yes. What you have are missile-type weapons in orbit. I mean, when this is finalized.
Right.
But originally, Edward Teller, as you know, the father of the H-bomb, he was trying to get Reagan to actually put hydrogen, hydrogen bomb power, which would project the lasers to Earth. So that kind of orbiting atomic or nuclear materials would be in orbit.
Right.
And, of course, if they ever crashed, it would be hell to pay.
Well, certainly. But weapons against terrorists. Now, terrorists are pretty much... I've heard of, surgical strikes with bombs. Okay. But to hit a terrorist from outer space... That's pretty surgical, wouldn't you say?
Well, they're doing it with drones right now. But the trouble is they kill not only the intended target,
no,
but the grandmother and the children and so on.
Certainly.
I originally knew one of my close friends was Robert Bowman, B-O-W-M-A-N, who was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. Bob was the first Star Wars director under Jimmy Carter. People think this took place under Reagan. It had been going on forever. And he's the one that made the famous statement that you simply, trying to hit a missile with a missile was like trying to hit a nickel with a .22 rifle shot.
Mm-hmm.
Next to impossible with those weapons, and certainly not more than, even if they even hit a dozen, that doesn't solve your problem. It's got to be perfect. So weapons in space to kill other weapons, let's say that the Russians launched at us tomorrow, anything that is even remotely in sight to try to catch those weapons is just a fool's errand.
Right.
But that doesn't matter. They build them anyway because they make money.
Yeah, they build them and make money. That's it.
And the other thing about it is if we do weaponize space and anything goes awry, as occurred with some Chinese rockets that have gone up, these, quote, peaceful rockets, when they explode, they put space debris that make it nearly impossible over time for the U.S. or anybody else to do space missions.
Yeah.
There are thousands of pieces of debris right now.
Oh, millions, millions and millions.
Yeah, sure.
But the thing is, back to this, we're going to need the space-based weapons to fight aliens, and it's all a lie. You know, it seems so far-fetched an idea, and yet Stephen Greer and Canada's ex-Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer, they're all talking about these false claims of false flags.
And that, of course, was Von Braun's point, of course, in Carol Rosen's statement. But let's look at it this way, Dave. If there's anybody... Forever, people are saying to me, Bill, there can't be UFOs here that are from any place in the galaxy or anywhere else in the universe, because they can't. We can't get from here to there. That's not the question. The question is, how did they get from there to here, meaning that they have advanced physics that we don't understand? And if that's the case, do you want to fire any kind of space weapons at that kind of a group of people? In fact, the Air Force knows this. And the reason I know this, we had a sighting here at Whiteman Air Force Base in 1984. Linda Moulton Howe did an interview with Airman Dale Hogan. And the UFO hovered large, in this case, I think, boomerang, over what are called igloos. The bases like Whiteman had extra warheads, which they stored in igloos. And Dale Hogan was on top of one of these to be sure it was secure, and the big UFO came over one of their big hangars on the tarmac, shone right down on Hogan, and one of the rays actually burned his arm. The other one was doing like a grid search, trying to determine apparently what was in the igloo. So later, whenever the, quote, UFO officer, Dave, that was his title, Lieutenant Colonel, came out to observe, he told Hogan, look down, don't you dare look up. And Hogan had his weapon and said, well, should I fire? And essentially, the UFO officer said, they'll have us for lunch if you do.
Yeah.
So, that in itself shows you, wouldn't it be ridiculous to have for the United States to have orbiting weapons and try to fire on a UFO?
Well,
a UFO could put that out of commission, just like they did Bob Salas's missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base.
I often talk with my guests on this show about the shoot 'em down order that Truman gave when they started buzzing his house to the White House.
Right.
He couldn't care less about these guys till they started buzzing his house, and they said, "Well, shoot them down if they don't answer your hail."
Right.
You know, like they're going to hear you. You know,
I don't know all the data on the early Air Force losses, but it's many more than most people think.
Oh yeah,
when U.S. airplanes were sent to chase UFOs, many of those did not come back, and I don't know all the figures on it, but I do know some very responsible people have spoken to that.
Yeah, I was just a couple months ago, I was talking to one of my guests, and I can't remember the whole thing now, but You can go to the archives and listen to all the shows. But at any rate, I said that there were more planes taken out by UFOs during that period than in World War II, and I was corrected. It wasn't World War II, it was the Korean War. During the Korean War. And bottom line is there were enough pilots taken out by these UFOs who were just defending themselves.
Yes.
You know, they weren't attacking us.
No.
They were defending themselves. And so they said, okay, stop shooting them down, just escort them out. Buzz them, escort them out, which I have seen video of that happening. And
you know,
and reports.
One of the big ones in Washington, as you know, was in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met a former Air Force lieutenant colonel who's very well known in UFO circles now, and I cannot think of his name. But he was in Alexandria, Virginia, the day that the UFOs came over the White House. He saw them himself. In fact, that was one of the things that got Project Blue Book got Blue Book going.
Mm.
There were so many UFOs during a current week, during a week in 1952, that the Air Force simply did not know what to do. And that, of course, is when they pulled together what was known as the Robertson Panel. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they found one of the reasons you and I are still get the giggle factor right now is the Robertson Panel. You know, the CIA got together with a well-known physicist by the name of H.P. Robertson and a social psychologist, I think, from Princeton, Hadley Cadrill.
Mm.
Cantrell, and said to the group, and they brainstormed, how do we debunk this?
Mm-hmm.
So they used actors, they used famous people, etc., to make fun of anybody who even talked about a UFO.
Right. Ridicule.
We still get it.
Ridicule is one of the biggest factors. Nobody wants to be ridiculed. So they,
right.
You know, and I had my whole family had a sighting when my sister and I were kids. And she didn't want to tell anybody about it, which is typical. And me, I was in, MUFON and writing books on the subject and everything.
Right.
And she said, I don't want to tell anybody. They'll make fun of me. I said,
well,
you know,
many people don't, and it, you know, it can come home to hurt you in your occupation.
Hmm?
I've been enough of a dissident over the years at the University of Missouri when I was here. It doesn't matter, and I'm an old man now, so it's not a big deal. But for a young assistant professor right now to take on the UFO issue at the University of Missouri would be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my colleagues who trust me in every other area, Dave, I have close people who think this is all foolishness, and they won't read. They read everything under the sun, but they won't read or go online.
That's it.
Or listen to Paul Hellyer or
right.
Lord Hill Norton or
right.
Edgar Mitchell or whoever.
There's just no evidence to support it. Well, here it is. Look at it. No, I'm not going to look at it.
Dave, 2 days ago, I had an email from a guy I was in graduate school with at Indiana University, and he's a very good man, a very good beastnik, et cetera. But he is very skeptical of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you may know, recently there was a document discovered at Westminster College here in Missouri where the Churchill Memorial is, which indicated that Churchill himself had been very concerned with UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
Not only had he been concerned, but he and Eisenhower squelched one report of an RFA group that was returning from a bombing situation,
yeah.
And they had a really close sighting, and Churchill was frightened to death that it would panic the public like the Orson Welles
right.
War of the Worlds.
That's right.
So my friend said, Bill, he emailed me back, and he says, why is it that all this essentially took place in the past? where are the UFO sightings today? And I said, and I won't mention his name, we'll call him Bob. Bob, what you need to do is get out your computer and simply Google recent UFOs and see what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, and also look at the National UFO Reporting Center.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him the URL and said, told him how to do it, and gave him California statistics. You know, hundreds and hundreds of UFOs, and they happen daily around the world.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 about in this country a year, in a year alone. And as you and I know, that's only 5% because only about 5% are reported.
That's right. I need
but
to.
He's wondering why they don't happen today. It's going on
right.
as we speak.
Right. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with UFO researcher and peace advocate, Dr. Bill Wickersham. But I did want to mention, Bill, that you know, speaking of Carol Ross and those predictions that Warner von Braun had made about the sequence of events that were going to occur that required space-based weapons, ultimately we're going to have to fight the aliens. It's all a lie, and pretty much all of this has come to pass, except this false flag alien invasion, the Independence Day scenario that we have to defend ourselves against.
You know, I'm not sure about the false flag, how the U.S. will or will not use it, because if they do, then they open the whole can of worms on UFO and their cover-up and all the stuff that's gone on for 70 years.
Yeah.
I think they're more likely to still hang in and say, what they're really, in fact, I saw an article today. They're saying North Korea is the reason for a buildup in Iran. Somebody that doesn't have a handful of missiles, but you justify that right now. That's the excuse they're using right now.
Yeah.
That was in one of today's papers.
Yeah, I don't know why we don't pick his missiles out of the sky. I mean, you know, if we're so concerned about them, even if they are test missiles, just pick them out of the sky. He wants to make a statement to us, we can make a statement to him. But that's political. We don't talk about that. So anyway, back to the false flag. Do you think I always say that the disclosure is going to come when E.T. decides and to disclose, not our governments, but E.T. is going to make it.
Well, you know, you may well be right about that. That's sort of, you know, they control it, Dave. They, you know, we don't have any control over this to speak of at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, do you remember the report that came out about 3 years ago by Professor Paul Springer?
No.
Springer is a former history professor at West Point. He got his PhD at Texas A&M,
mm-hmm.
and he's now, or was 3 years ago or 2 years ago, at Maxwell Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
And he was given permission, believe it or not, he was given permission to discuss this topic. And when he was asked about it, he said, well, it all depends on why they are here. You know, and we don't know why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
Are we some kind of science experiment? Maybe.
Yeah.
Is this hybrid genetic thing that a lot of people talk about, is that what it is? Is it, what is it? Do they need resources? What is it? And we just don't know that. Frankly, from my point of view, it looks like, I think it's like a dripping water faucet.
Mm-hmm.
They probably know us better than we do in terms of social and psychological upset and have been dripping it out over a period of 70 years.
Oh, yeah.
So that you don't have the
shock
War
effect
of the Worlds scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but when they finally do, let's assume that I'm correct and you and I are correct and the ET is the one are the ones that that decide to make it known on no uncertain terms that we are not alone in the universe. Okay, now what do we do? Do we say okay, let's meet and greet these people, or do we say, well, they must be coming to take us over because that's what we would do if we were in a go to another planet, right?
Well, you know, see that you know Stephen Hawking has spoken to this for many years.
Mm-hmm.
His concern, he says, that he's still back with SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence,
right,
and the program they have at Berkeley. When I say he's with, that's been his position, that we're listening out there. No, those folks don't talk about the ETs at Socorro or the ones at Roswell or wherever. They spend millions of dollars still looking for first contact.
Yeah.
But his point was, if we did make contact, he didn't think we should answer because it would be like Columbus dealing with the Native Americans,
mm-hmm.
that superior culture would do us in a New York minute. And that's been one of the concerns for a long time. In fact, that's been a CIA concern.
Mm-hmm.
There was a CIA, I've forgotten his name now, but a very well-known CIA analyst who said, you know, when a superior culture, technologically speaking, interacts with one less that is inferior, the inferior one usually goes under. Now, there are all kinds of problems with this, too. What about how does it affect our religion? Let's assume for a moment that, Dave, that you are a Nobel laureate in physics,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you truly find out that someone is a million years ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you in the corner, doesn't it?
Yeah. Science.
In fact, the Brookings Institution was commissioned to do such a study in 1960. What would be the upshot if disclosure really occurred and we had contact with the ETs, and the group that they said would be most affected would be scientists and engineers,
mm-hmm.
because they think they know everything. I don't mean to put it that way, but they, you know, they're smart people.
You can put it that
way. And you find out you're a million years behind.
Yeah, you can put it that way. You can put it that way. Yeah, I agree that they're gonna have egg on their face, and I think that's why I've mentioned it before on this show that the Catholic Church is coming forward and saying, you know, they're out there, they're all God's children, and we're all brothers, and you know, because
part of the problem, Dave,
because they know,
I'm not sure who all the ETs are.
Oh, right. Oh, I understand.
You know, Scott Jones and Elizabeth Smith, they've identified at least 18. I think I'm correct in saying that Paul Hillier believes, you know, there are 80 or more. So
yeah.
Who are you dealing with?
You have all kinds of different numbers coming out.
Speculation may be false.
Well,
who knows?
Yeah, we were talking last month about there are 57 varieties, and that sounds kind of like Heinz. But who was it that was saying that? The guy that used to, Sergeant Stone.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
that's right. But isn't his stuff interesting?
Yeah, it is, and it sounds like, you know, above the pale. But why should he come out and say all these things?
Well, I'm convinced Stone is a sane man. He is not an upset individual, and I think what he's doing out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah,
he's not doing it for money or anything else. He's
no.
trying to let us know that this is for real.
Yeah.
But then there's Charles Hall, you know, also who was an airman in Nevada, and he dealt with the tall whites for
right.
about 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And he's now a physicist, and when you listen to him talk, I'm convinced he dealt with the tall whites.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do to assure peace in space?
Well, the first step would be for the United States of America to sign and abide by the UN treaty, the Treaty for the Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space,
mm-hmm.
and then abide by it and promise to never weaponize space. It's already militarized. In fact, that's not a bad thing because there, you know, There's all kinds of good stuff we get from satellites, but we do not need weapons. And part of the problem is the Russians and Chinese have begged us not to do it. And if we do do it, we'll never get nuclear disarmament because that will always be their ace in the hole.
They begged us not to do what? Weaponize?
They begged us not to put weapons in space.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my opinion on that is if we can do it, we will do it.
That well, we may do it, but it's, you know, a lot of it's not going to work. You know,
yeah.
What it is is welfare for the rich, welfare for Boeing and TRW and Grumman and so on.
All right, back to the military-industrial complex, right?
Right.
Like I say, if it's like the cloning, human cloning. I've always said, you know, you're not supposed to do it. It's morally and wrong to clone a human being. But I have always said, if they can do it, they will do it, and they're doing it in England.
Well, you know, it used to be that we had an Office of Technology Assessment in the U.S. government. In fact, one of my bosses, former Senator Clark of Pennsylvania, was one of the big proponents of that. And the point was, don't build something just because you can. Let's try to do some analysis of what will be the side effects and the spinoffs and the negatives and the positives. And intelligent people would do that, but we don't do it. If we can make it, we're going to make it. Yeah. Try to.
Look at the, you know more about the atom bomb than I do.
I doubt it. No, I don't know much about the bomb. Go ahead, though.
Okay. Well, they said when they invented the atom bomb, they said, well, if one atom destroys the atoms next to it and those atoms destroy the atoms next to it, wouldn't it just be a chain reaction that'll encompass the entire Earth? And the other scientists said, yeah, you're probably right. Oh, well, let's explode it anyway. Because we can.
They didn't know what was going to happen at Los Alamos. They really didn't with that first explosion.
But let's do it because we can.
That's right. And also, some scientists say, ain't it beautiful? You know, the science is beautiful of it, no matter what it does to the planet or to people.
Yeah, the science behind it is intriguing, if not beautiful in a pretty way, but intriguing. It's just the idea that, you know, you can use it for peaceful purposes or you can blow up the Earth. But I've also said that with E.T. showing up at our nuclear bases and switching our nuclear weapons off,
right?
They're making a statement that if you use these things or attempt to use these things, we'll just switch them off.
Well, Bob Hastings is very, I'm sure you probably had Bob on or you know him.
I did, yes.
And Bob, that's his position, that somebody, whoever it is, in those UFOs, in those saucers, over Maelstrom and over Minot and so on, Warren Air Force Base, that's what they are trying to tell us.
Right.
You know, and I wish they'd switch them off right now, to tell you the
truth.
Right,
right. Well, they have, but we switched them back on. But their message was, I think, well taken. That
You don't know. See, we don't know what all the rules of the universe or the galaxy are.
Now,
in terms of intervention, maybe they may have some kind of ethic that we don't know about.
And look at our solar system as an atom. You know, if this atom blows up, it blows up the atom next to it, which blows up the atoms next to it, and just, you know, a chain reaction, just like in the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
So what we're doing here, they don't want to interfere with what we're doing at the same time. We are threatening them without us even knowing it.
Yeah, right. We don't need a lot of nuclear explosions, that's for darn sure. Interestingly enough, on that topic, Dave, literally one of the world's foremost authorities on nuclear winter is one of my colleagues right here at the University of Missouri, Steve Starr. Mm. If you haven't seen Steve's website, it's nucleardarkness.org. In fact, he just was in a meeting in California with some folks who are trying to stop this. But I would suggest you take a look if you get a chance.
Mm.
Nucleardarkness.org. Stephen Starr, S-T-A-R-R.
Well, back to this war in space. Do you think that the day will come when we would have to protect ourselves either by using our weapons on this planet or weapons in space against some of the ET races?
I think it would be exactly what the UFO officer at Whiteman Air Force Base told Airman Hogan. They'll have us for lunch.
Yeah.
It would be the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard of. They've got to be thousands of years ahead of us, or many years, in order to have craft that stop on a dime, that cut corners, that hover, that go thousands of miles an hour, that have a wingspan like the one that was over Phoenix, Arizona,
right,
1997. I believe the wingspan was about a mile long.
Yeah.
You want to go up against somebody with that kind of technology, I know I sure don't.
And just take off on a dime and vanish into space again.
You know, here, when Dale Hogan spotted the UFO at Whiteman, they sent up Harrier jets to try to pursue it.
Hmm.
And it would instantaneously just disappear.
Yeah.
And they would chase it. It would come back and do its work on the igloos. And the jets would come back, and it would disappear again.
Yeah.
It can go that fast and can overwhelm the kind of technology we have to try to shoot them down or do anything warlike, to me, would be the height of stupidity.
It would be. But have you known mankind to be anything other than that? Oh, well. So the cover-up continues until E.T. decides it's not going to continue. What do you think?
Well, I think we got to get some journalists on the horse. That's what I think.
Mm.
You know, Terry Hansen, you remember Terry?
No.
Terry was, I think he lived in the Seattle area. He was a UFO journalist and wrote a book on it and really took all the major media apart. CNN, you know, ABC, CBS, New York Times, Washington Post. When Hastings, I believe it was when Bob had one of his meetings at the National Press Club,
mm-hmm.
and they interviewed people like Bob Salas and Charles Halt and others. Do you know who the Washington Post sent to cover it?
Mm.
Their humor editor.
Oh, geez.
I was so mad, I called him. I called the guy in D.C. I said, what do you know at Washington Post? His name was Smith, I recall. What do you know about UFOs? Well, he said, not much. I said, well, why are you covering that meeting? He said, they sent me to do it. that's been the attitude hardly any of the big shots will go after.
No. What is your, where can people go to find out more about your work, Doctor?
Well, I don't have a website. I do, in terms of the book on nuclear weapons, we do have a website. And it's www.confrontingnuclearwar.com.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I'll say that again. www.confrontingnuclearwar.com. With regard to my UFO stuff, the best way to do it is to just Google Bill Wickersham-UFOs.
Very good.
I have a lot of interviews locally with station KBIA, which you can actually see the interviews. They were podcasts.
Okay.
And then I have dozens of articles that can be retrieved that
way. I appreciate you coming on today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Bye.
See you later, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.com. Tuesdayforum.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Guys and dolls, you're at the malt shop with Daddy G, and we're going back to the 50s and 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing outrun my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do. A Cadillac pulled up to 104. My phone got hot and wouldn't do no more. The gun got cloud and started to rain. I tooted my horn for the passing lane. A rainwater blowing all under my hood. I knew that was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? Half a mile ahead, Cadillac looking like setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill.